We've had our hospitals come back and tell us that they've seen something close to a 98% reduction in sepsis mortality.
Welcome to the Redox Podcast. I'm your host, Nico Skivaski, co-founder and president of Redox, where we are on a mission to make healthcare data useful and in turn enable frictionless adoption of technology in healthcare. I want to use this podcast to explore the intersection between healthcare and technology. How is tech making a difference? What are the barriers to adoption and how are they being overcome? I'll be interviewing some of our industry's brightest minds, up-and-coming technologists, and health tech legends that have paved the way for what's to come. One thing is certain, healthcare will change dramatically in the coming years. My hope is that you'll leave these conversations with a bit more context, along with a jolt of optimism for what's to come. And with that in mind, I welcome you to the Redox Podcast. Dr. Sarma Velamuri is an internal medicine doc, hospitalist, and has served in various leadership and committee roles surrounding patient safety with a particular attention on sepsis. He co-founded Luminaire, a company focused on early detection of sepsis back in 2014. And of course, with the current pandemic, the company has extended to really help out the COVID-19 response. So we'll get to dive into that a little bit. In all his spare time, he's also an attending physician at HCA Gulf Coast. Sarma, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Hi, Nico. Thank you for having me.
When we spoke last week, you mentioned that hospitals caring about sepsis is a relatively new phenomenon. Of course, nowadays, it's something that people pay a lot of attention to, tracking hospital-acquired infections, trying to reduce them. Can you give us some background on the space itself and how it became to be such a hot topic?
It's not that people didn't care about sepsis as much as we accepted that people died of sepsis all the time. We would just see it happen over and over and over again. So, Nico, sepsis is the body's abnormal response to an infection. And one way to look at it is how a bull responds to a matador. So if it gets poked with a stick, the response that the bull has to the matador is completely out of proportion to the insult, so to speak. So sepsis is pretty much like that. It's a response to an infection. The body's response is sometimes out of proportion to what is happening. And every hospital usually has a committee that's working on sepsis. And these are people who are dedicated, who really want to make a difference. And after some time, you get frustrated with the numerous workflow issues that you see with all the moving parts around sepsis. I think it was in 2017 that sepsis was declared as a medical emergency by the CDC. And the Center for Medicare Services rolled out a very controversial quality measure to check whether hospitals were taking good care of sepsis patients or not. And since then, there's been a new measure called a bundle payment initiative that has come out for sepsis that has put an even bigger financial incentive for hospitals to work on sepsis. So now it's a hot button topic, which is good because that means it'll get fixed.
You know, you started your company back in 2014. So this was, you know, before it was a hot button issue. Can you give us some background on what led you to start the company and the insight that you found that helped you kind of create the company as it is today?
Sure. It's actually a pretty sad story. I was serving on a hospital sepsis improvement committee. I was the director for utilization review for another hospital system, and I had patients in numerous skilled nursing facilities. So I saw patients across the whole spectrum of inpatient acute care, outpatient long-term acute care, and skilled nursing services all the way till they got home. And being on these numerous committees, I realized that there was a workflow issue, that the information that the patient is sick was already in the medical record system. The alarm in the medical record system didn't necessarily guarantee that a patient would get the treatment required. So I started looking for better software to purchase for the hospital to guarantee that every patient who actually had sepsis would get treated for sepsis, and we would know about it if that wasn't happening. While I was searching for this software product, my friend's daughter was admitted to my ICU with a pneumonia, an infection of the lungs, and she was on a ventilator. And I just went up to the hospital to pay a social visit, check in on her and the family. I get off the elevator. I remember very clearly it was 3:30 or 4 in the morning. I wanted to kind of spend some time with the family before I started rounds. And I get off the elevator, and they call code blue on the overhead. I see my friend is standing outside the ICU and he's crying. And I go into the room and the intern and resident are doing chest compressions on his daughter. They get tired. I start doing chest compressions. And 45 minutes later, I had to go tell my friend that his daughter died of septic shock. And that was the worst day of my life. I looked in the medical record. It was plain to me that the alarm had gone off. The nurse had called the intern, who called the resident, who called the fellow, who called the attending physician. Everybody knew about what was happening. And she had been decompensating for a few hours before. But, you know, she was sick and it wasn't very clear what the future held. And I felt like the software should have predicted the events that were going to take place. So I came home that day. It was the worst day of my life. And I decided I would do something about it. So I mortgaged my house and started the company in the garage. Thankfully, we're not in the garage anymore. And yeah, that's how we got started. Like I started looking for a solution myself, didn't find anything, and decided to build one.
So you know? Within that story, it sounds like the EHR had a lot of the data. And it also has alarms and alerts saying that you should do something about it. Is it that those alarms are too frequent, or why aren't they causing the intervention necessary? And what does Luminaire do that's different?
The EHR systems have alarms in place that go off at a pretty predictable frequency. Now, the problem with that is the nurse or the physician or the nurse practitioner or the physician's assistant, they're not sitting there staring at a computer screen, waiting for these alarms to go off. They're taking care of patients. They have workflows. The nurse is, you know, usually very, very busy. I've seen nurses on the floor that this shift starts at 7 a.m. and sometimes it'll be 9 a.m. before they log into their computer or log into a particular patient's chart. So what we realized was the issue is not just a detection problem. There's a detection problem which you can solve to a certain extent with the information in the medical record. The issue is also a workflow problem. How do you take a nurse who has five patients who is extremely busy from the time he or she sets foot in the hospital and starts their shift? They have 1,000 things attacking them. The alarm bell is going off. The nurses, you know, having to respond to that. They have to give out medications. They have to, you know, fill out their documentation. There's so many things come inbound. What we did was we spent a year just workflow mapping. We walked around in numerous hospitals. We looked at 10 hospital systems at least and talked to the nurses, talked to the nurse assistants, I've even talked to janitorial staff, anyone who had anything to do with a patient who had sepsis, from the CEO, CIO level, CNOs, chief medical officers, all the way through to the person doing the discharge paperwork for the patient. And we realized that it's the ability to actually control the nurse's workflow at the front end of the day to make sure that the data is looked at accurately and acted upon. And that's what, you know, software really should do, is not leave that last portion of implementing the treatment up to a person. It should be able to enable the person to understand what needs to get done and implement it without pain. And that's what we do.
Can you tell us a little bit about the impact that Luminaire has had since you've rolled it out?
We've deployed it at a few hospitals and it's been pretty incredible. We've had our hospitals come back and tell us that they've seen something close to a 98% reduction in sepsis mortality. A couple of these hospitals have said they haven't actually seen a patient develop or die of sepsis in the last 2 years. Wow. The other thing we've heard a lot is about false positives, about the alarm fatigue. Usually alarm systems have a huge, you know, false positive rate and alarm fatigue. When one of our customers was asked, tell us about your false positive rate, I was surprised. They looked at each other and they said, I don't actually remember. I think we had one last year. And that was pretty amazing to me. And you know, so the false positive rate is really, really low. And then the other kind of side effect we've noticed more recently is that all-cause mortality has gone down. So mortality, not just due to sepsis, but because of heart failure and stroke and all these other things have gone down. Rapid response calls have gone down. the rates of emergent intubations have gone down. And on the financial side, you know, doctors get these annoying coding queries, you know, does this patient have sepsis? What kind of sepsis do they have? And, you know, I've been guilty as the next doctor of not understanding what the coding query meant and just answered something to get rid of it. We've seen an improvement in coding accuracy. And so that means that the hospital is not getting penalized for not taking care of patients who didn't have sepsis to start with because the documentation said they have sepsis. So they're not getting a financial penalty for that. And on the other side, they're getting paid more accurately. So when a patient does have sepsis or severe sepsis, the documentation is more tight, it's more accurate. And so they're getting paid monies that they would previously have missed out on.
Can you talk through what an implementation looks like? It sounds like you need a lot of data to make this work from the EHR.
That's right. So you've touched upon the pain point. So most of the time when a chief nursing officer or chief medical officer or a nurse or someone on the clinical side looks at our product, they go, this is a no-brainer. I don't understand why we are not already doing this. And we see a lot of resistance, essentially from bandwidth, is our hospital IT teams are busy. They're, you know, dealing with integration. And we need something rather straightforward. We need an ADT feed. We need labs. We need, you know, vital signs. And that's kind of it. And that's the reason we're on Redox. And I know this is your podcast and you haven't paid me to say this. But once that integration part is done, once you have the ADT feed, once you have the labs and you have the vitals, it's kind of a smooth sailing from there. You know, you just kind of plug in and go. Our training is rather straightforward. In fact, we've come to this place where our nurses just train other nurses and, you know, or they volunteer to screen other nurses' patients. So the real choke point is just the integration part, is getting time from extremely busy IT departments. You know, everybody's buying an app in the hospital. Everybody wants their app to be deployed first. And in our case, we've been rather fortunate. Our partners kind of understand sepsis. They understand the value to the patient and the value to the decreased mortality. And so we do get prioritized. But having something like Redox in place is extremely useful, because if you're a Redox customer, installation is pretty much is rather instantaneous. You kind of give us permission, you let Redox know, and you know we get your data feed, and that's kind of it.
Well, thank you for that commercial there. So I'm interested in, you know, your customer segment, hospitals. They've obviously been hit really hard by the pandemic. In some regions, they're overwhelmed by COVID-19 patient care. And in other regions, they've become kind of ghost towns as people are trying to avoid these places and, you know, canceling elective procedures and volumes just being down generally. How has the pandemic affected your business?
So we started off building software for hospitals. And when COVID hit, we were in the CDC's showcase for sepsis with, you know, Cerner and Philips and you guys. And someone on the CDC's team looked at us and said, hey, do you guys realize you can use your tool for COVID? And we said, yeah, can you hook us up and help us understand, like, you know, some more on what that means to you? And we talked to the CDC's COVID response team, and we realized that they're right. Like, we could use our core technology for COVID assessment in the public and for triage. And that's what we did. We modified our sepsis platform, built it for COVID now, and deployed it to the country's third largest healthcare population, which is Harris County, Houston. You know, one point of time, we were, you know, all of the 5.5 million people in the Houston area, whoever need testing based on zip code and location and, you know, what their comorbidities were, what their first responder status was, all of that would go through our platform and allow the city to, you know, guide these people to the right testing site. And so our core competency is to kind of stop sepsis, and hospitals have, like you said, some of them are struggling, but this financial component of like getting more efficient, getting better patient outcomes, getting, you know, leaner, so to speak, that's something that weighs in our favor. So we've seen hospitals are continuing to engage with us. It's been a little bit slower because, you know, the people we talk to are usually the people who are on the COVID response team for the hospital. But we're going in two directions. One is the hospital and the market and addressing sepsis. And the other market is the enterprise market. And we've successfully now, we're helping over 1,000 people go to work safely and growing. We've deployed at, you know, I'm just looking at my list here. We have critical infrastructure employees on it, like the people who support Houston's waterworks. We have some schools on it. We have some churches on it. We have accounting firms, lawyers, you name it, different verticals. So COVID has been weird. It's we're just happy we've been able to keep afloat and help our customers at this time.
It's not clear to me how this is used for those types of businesses like schools and churches and other sorts of employers. How are they using it?
Sure, good question. Okay, so let's just look at the sepsis side, right? So what we do is we take the information that's present in the EHR system, right? And we fill out, for all intents and purposes, the sepsis protocol. So we automate that portion. If you looked at the sepsis protocol, it's basically a bunch of questions. Does this person have a white count? Do they have a fever? Do they have tachycardia? Do they have, you know, what's their oxygen number? What's their heart rate? So they have all of these different parameters that we automate. And so it turns out for COVID, a lot of these parameters are actually pretty close. It's like, does this person have a fever? Do they have a cough? Have they been in contact with someone who has COVID? What comorbidities do they have? What age group are they in? Where are they located? So it's essentially, I would say, you know, the same approach towards solving sepsis that you can go to solving COVID. And that's been something unexpected for us.
So the employer, for instance, will actually use this with their employees to figure out, you know, can these people safely return back to work?
Yeah, that's right. So the so let's say that you have 1,000 people who work for you. What happens is, you know, every day in the morning, the person goes onto their phone or onto their computers. They self-report their sort of, you know, what they've been doing, who they've been in contact with, their syndromic surveillance data. If they have, you know, some sort of connected device, it'll pull the data from the connected device and it'll triage out your employee workforce into, you know, a green, which means they're asymptomatic. They can probably come to work as long as they're wearing a mask and social distancing, washing their hands. A yellow, which means they've been in contact with someone who has COVID. They need to be watched closely. They can probably still go to work as long as they're kind of isolated. And then the red is, you know, people who have symptoms or have warning markers of COVID, they get routed to telehealth and testing. And there's all kinds of, you know, interesting things on the back end with respect to, you know, if you're less than 500 employees, you get a tax break so you can continue to pay your employees through the CARES Act and so on.
It seems like having a solution like that in place, like within a given region, would be a necessary step for us to responsibly open up the economy again. Are governments trying to put in systems like this, you know, combined with more advanced contact tracing? Like, what are you seeing in the market now that you're playing in that space and selling into organizations looking to figure out how to open up again?
So with respect to government, we're about to announce shortly a showcase with the Center for Disease Control called Returning America to Work. And that exactly answers your question. So you can take all of this information from syndromic surveillance, you know, on your employees, pass it on to your occupational health providers who do all of the testing. The data gets scrubbed and de-identified and then pushed to the local state authorities on, like, you know, how many tests have been positive. And then think about the closing the loop, right? Like, what happens when this person recovers from COVID? You still have to kind of certify them ready to go back to work and track all of that information. As a country, we need syndromic surveillance data. You cannot implement a syndromic surveillance system from the federal government level, you know, with respect to all of the privacy concerns and issues. I don't see how that's possible. The only real way to do it is to have some sort of local system that you implement for employers that has an interoperability standard that reports the data back for epidemiology and contact tracing.
So you've been able to pivot to help out with COVID-19. What does the future look like for Luminaire?
We just recently got our patent allowed by the USPTO, which was, you know, took about 5 years. But that was interesting because there's several unique aspects to what we're doing. And we've realized that we can now apply the system to pretty much anything that requires workforce optimization within the hospital. We've had numerous requests for like a heart failure system, a stroke protocol, labor and delivery, pediatric sepsis, stuff in neonatology. So on the inpatient side, a lot of inbound kind of like, you know, build this product for us type activity. And in the outpatient side, we're calling this employee health maintenance. You're trying not to let the person get sick. So, you know, the future looks like other disease conditions like diabetes, hypertension, heart failure, and so on. It's just right now we're focused on stopping the number one cause of death in hospitals and, you know, allowing people to get back to work safely and reopening the economy safely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It was a pleasure having you here and learning a lot about what's going on with these infectious diseases.
Nico, thank you. I'm a big fan of Redox, as I've said before, and look forward to working with you guys as we bring on more hospitals to the platform.
Likewise. I just am glad that we can play a small part.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Hey everyone, Nico here again. Huge thank you to Dr. Sarma Velamuri for joining us on the show, and perhaps a bigger thank you to the work that you do to reduce the onset of sepsis and now the spread of COVID-19. This will be a bit of a theme in the coming weeks, how digital health companies have been impacted, have had to pivot, or have found rapid growth among the pandemic response. Next time on the Redox podcast, I'll have Bronwyn Spira, the founder and CEO of Force Therapeutics, diving into those questions with us. So be sure to subscribe wherever you podcast, and thanks for listening.